grab your highlighters. Can't find them? They're probably right there in your pocket protector. It's time for that Early Childhood Nerd Podcast. Let's get nerdy. Here's Heather.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of That Early Childhood Nerd. I'm Heather Burnt Santee. And today with me, Heather had a nap today. She's not quite awake yet. Bethany Corey is here. Hi, Bethany.
Hello.
And Carol Garboden-Murray. Hi, Carol.
Hi, everyone. Hello.
We haven't been with each other's faces on a screen for a long time. So we're going to try and do part two of the Slow Knowledge book that we recorded about early in the summer, maybe. It's been a little while, longer than we intended. But the book again is Slow Knowledge and the Unhurried Child, Time for Slow Pedagogies in Early Childhood Education by Allison Clark. And I'll just quick do a, what?
No, don't worry about that. I'm writing notes.
Oh, okay.
Myself. I'm sorry.
Bethany's
I don't have any paper
stuff in the chat
me.
Box.
Sorry.
I'm already struggling. Let me read the quote. Here we go. So this is actually in chapter 8 of the book, but it's a quote from one of the practitioners that was interviewed as part of this process, I think, named Jit Jensen. She's Danish. And the quote is, "The great importance given to the everyday life of Danish centers also underlines the importance attached to the life here and now instead of instrumental ideas about future outcomes. What is important, what matters, is children and adults living together." Beautiful. I've really sort of been on a tear again. I mean, it's sort of always bubbling, but just the whole, maybe because it's back to school time and the whole school readiness and preparing children to be college ready. We're talking about that already in our early childhood. And so this is a good one, Carol, who chose the quote to sort of get us going on it, because that's like the opposite of slow pedagogy, right?
It's right. And it's like the first part of that quote, even before you read it, she talks about going to the bathroom, taking a nap, having snack. You know, it's just, mm-hmm. of course, I just think that, and this whole idea of the mundane, right? Mm-hmm. What we consider the mundane, like, it's right before us. The mm-hmm. most amazing stuff is right there. And somehow in our field, we're trying to contrive activities, you know, how can we improve their fine motor skills?
Yeah.
Well, you could let them put on their sock. It's pretty amazing.
Right. You can let them pull their pants up.
yeah
so I was thinking, because of course anything that I read along those lines reminds me of your book, Carol, and I was thinking about this because I'm getting ready to use it to teach again in the fall, and I've noticed this will be my third semester using it to teach the intro to early childhood class. And what I've noticed is that the people who are just coming into, like, not in the field working yet, but they're coming in to take the classes, are always like, well, yeah, of course, that's how you handle care times. And of course, care is important. And it's the people who've been doing the work for a while and already have that script of rushing through to get to the important stuff, who really, like, they don't argue with it, but they have a much bigger reaction to thinking in this way, because it's so different from the way they've been really acculturated. Something like that is a word.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I know. It was talking in this chapter also about, like, the in-between moments. And I like that idea, because we talk so much about transitions in early childhood.
Yeah.
And I think, like, we try to eliminate transitions. We want children to have big blocks of time, but we're always going to have transitions. Mm-hmm. Everyday life has transitions. You have to go to the bathroom. You need to stop and throw somebody in the garbage can. You need to put a Band-Aid on your knee or whatever. And so, like, I think, like, I was thinking how we kind of talked about, oh, let's make the most of transitions. Mm-hmm. You know, we can sing a song while we're transitioning, or we can, you know, play a game, or we can make it fun. And that's all fine and good and all that. But, and then there's something deeper about just slowing down and letting it be adults and children living together.
Right. I just, that phrase says so much, just that right? ending phrase of the quote. And that's, you know, I often talk about, you know, we're just human beings together in this space. But it's so hard to really act like that's what we're doing once you get into those programs.
Yeah.
Myself included. I mean, I'm including my own earlier career.
Yeah. Cause it can feel like you're not like just being together and living together. If you don't have the mindset, in the text when I was, freaking Heather out, earlier in part two, she talks about the cultivation rather than the consumption of knowledge. And how, like, so if we have that mindset of, you know, we've got, like we always talk about, if we've got the list of things we have to do, if we have to get all these standards in and make sure each kid can do, you know, all of their colors mm-hmm. by the end of the week, then us just being together seems wasteful.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like it, but when we make that time for just being together, like a lot can come out from it, mm-hmm. you know, that you wouldn't see.
Mm-hmm. And so much of what drives people crazy, the global people, not any certain person, but working in early childhood is because we feel that way. Because we feel like we always have to be busy. We always have to be leading children in something. We always have to be working towards a specific outcome. Anything that gets in the way of that is seen as an inconvenience or as misbehavior or as either a child deficit or our own performance, you know, when if we just could transition into this way of thinking, this slow knowledge, this children and adults living together.
Yeah.
It would be so much less stressful. I mean, when I moved that way, I found it to be less stressful.
I know Bethany just said, like, we feel it's wasteful, right? So yeah. It's like, once you start like reading this and thinking about that, the underpinnings that we've been so conditioned with about mm-hmm. productivity, right? Mm-hmm. Just the use of time, the waste of time, the spending of time.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, we feel like we have to produce, we have to consume, we have to, you know, instead of, like you said, the cultivation or the participation, yeah. the being together.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just going to say cultivation is slow. It's not something right. that you have immediate results with.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I think it's like this idea that some of these false notions that we have about children too, like that children are busy and children have no attention span, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's kind of like, you know, how many times does a child want to hear that story today? Yeah. They want to hear it yeah. over and over again. Yeah. How long does a child want to sit in that sandbox and dig yeah. that hole? I mean, they don't have short attention spans.
Right.
And I think as adults, we project our own feelings because, I mean, honestly, sitting there and reading, you know, Good Night Moon 50 times is not necessarily what we might want to be doing.
Right.
So, you know, we have that like, well, you know, it's kind of like, even thinking, oh, they just want to read this one book. Like, why can't we do something else? Like, mm-hmm. we're always trying to push that, like, stop what you're doing and let's move on to this other thing.
Yeah.
So you can
yeah.
learn more.
But we say that one of the things we want in terms of readiness is focus and attention, right. but we spend so much of their early childhood interrupting their focus to bring it back to our focus. And so we inhibit the development of that skill, or we inhibit the, I don't want to say development because I think they already have it. We sort of teach them out of it.
We teach them distraction. We teach them. Even like you said about the book, like, you know, sometimes our curriculum plans or our ideas about literacy and how much we have to get in there. I've seen teachers like put the book on the shelf and save it for circle time, and it kind of disappears. It's mm-hmm. like, it's almost like an entertainment. Like this has to be fresh and novel mm-hmm. and the kids are going to be surprised. And then on Tuesday, we'll do another book. On a Wednesday, we'll do another book. And it's all going to fit into this theme of these things we're learning, mm-hmm. but there's not that sense of ownership and just finding the book and carrying the book around and loving the book and having a relationship with the book. And she talks about books and stories as being one of the ways, right, that we can slow down. Mm-hmm. Like, how do we treat books? How do we treat story? How do we treat narrative? And I think it goes so well with her idea about conversation and listening too, because she comes to this, Allison Clark brings in Vivian Gussin Paley, right? Mm-hmm. And how slow we have to go to listen and to catch the stories of children and to write down their words and to read their stories back to them. Like this whole idea of story being a central element of mm-hmm. our days together.
Yeah.
And it's just not that book that they love to hear over and over again, but it's our stories, our narratives, our conversations, mm-hmm. our writing down the things that they say. Yeah. I think that kind of gives us an idea of what a slow pedagogy could look like, that it's because we have this idea that like slow is dumb. Slow is the slow yeah. child. You know, we're slow. What's right. wrong with you? You're so slow. But right. this idea that slow is deep, that it's respectful of the child's pace, that it's the foundational kind of the mm-hmm. work that so I like how she brought up that whole chapter about story. What is mm-hmm. story? How do we use story, narrative, listening?
Yeah. And it's very much different from the way that we're taught in mm-hmm. it to do stories with children or to use books with children. Even if we're told that we should write down their narrations, it's for documentation and comparison. It's not necessarily just to be in the moment, noticing what the child notices and what's important to the child. So it takes a real, for me, it's sort of an example, as I was listening to you, Carol, of the way so many people take an idea in early childhood about children and turn it into being about the teacher mm-hmm. instead of just letting it be about the children. It's really hard if you're not slowing yourself down even.
Yeah, it is.
And I think that's one thing that the book points out, is that like you have to take that time to reflect on, you know, your day and your interactions mm-hmm. that you're being in that moment too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That reflection piece. She said some really good stuff about documentation, which I wanted to like highlight because it wasn't what I thought she was going to say. Because I think we're all getting a little, I don't know, documentation is kind of taking on a life of its own in right. our culture, with people trying to be Reggio. And we're not Reggio. Right. We don't have a couple hours every day to read. Right.
Oh, documentation can lose sight of the child.
Yes.
That was one that hit me.
Yes.
I've seen a lot of examples of that in, like you said, like Reggio inspired programs where, you know, they have their wall of everyone doing the shadow mm-hmm. art mm-hmm. investigation. Mm-hmm. I was going to say activity.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever they call it.
But it's displayed in a pretty way.
Yep.
And that's, you know,
yeah,
for the teacher, for the adults too.
Right.
Yeah. She said, does documentation, is it a performance and a display? Mm-hmm. And that's where you said, can it lose it to the children? And on the next page, she says, documentation under pressure becomes lifeless.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was so good too.
One of the centers I worked in, and it was one of the centers that's a part of a national chain, but the mandate was that you had to have so many, you know, two or three observations, two or three documentations of each child every week. And it turned into, we'll give you an hour out of the classroom to work on your documentation. And it turned into pretty much fabricating and creating. Like they'd pull a picture and just kind of make up their own story about, instead of being in the moment and, yeah, and having a purpose other than just to have three in my binder by the time the assistant director comes around to look at my binders. And it's such a waste of time. I mean, if we're worried about slow being wasting time,
right?
If we're really thinking about a good use of time with young children, that's more of a waste. That kind of performative documentation is more of a waste of time than.
She says, I'm uploading pieces to Story Park and Facebook. I'm uploading into the parent apps and the parents get them on their phone. It's a marketing strategy. Mm-hmm. No engagement in the material. Why have I chosen this photograph? Why have I chosen this story? I just downloaded them and here I am.
Yeah.
There's no slowing down the process. This is not pedagogy. It's marketing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I had a coworker who got one of those, like during the day, got, you know, the report from her child's center, and her child was 6 months old. And the picture was him laying on the floor, holding a board book and like eating it, kind of chewing on it. But the caption was learning about shapes and letters.
Okay. Oh,
God. Oh. That may have, checked that off your box for the day, but that wasn't, it wasn't pedagogy, period, but it was marketing, but it was inauthentic. And whether that comes from feeling like these are the things we have to focus on, these discrete academic skills, and that's going to be more important than him just finding a little bit of joy and exploration in the book that happened to be on the floor next to him. It has nothing to do with the content of the book. A skilled, reflective teacher can see what the value in that moment really is. But a pressured, stressed out, maybe just came into the classroom because of the turnover or whatever. Those are the folks that are going to struggle with being slow in their pedagogy, I think.
Yeah. And that whole idea, she talks about how observation changes the dynamic of the relationship with the child. So you're kind of always, I find myself like, I just want to put my notes away right now and be with the kids. Mm-hmm. But then I get so like into what they're saying, and then I find myself pulling out my notebook and writing it down. So it's like this gentle balance where you're so intrigued and in awe, mm-hmm. but you want to be there in the moment, right? So so I think that it's an art, right? The documentation part. And she developed, I guess, that she's called the mosaic. It's a mosaic approach or something. One of her chapters of that. I went and listened last night to her and Peter Moss on YouTube talking about it. And
what a combo.
Yes. There's like an hour. There's an hour on YouTube. It starts with her and Peter Moss. I think it's you all should watch it. It's like the urgency of the unhurried child or something like that.
Oh, wow. Okay. It's definitely powerful.
And anyway, what I can grasp from the mosaic approach is just that there's just so many ways of listening, mm-hmm. right? It's the way children move, being in tune with their pace, observing them, watching them with materials, mm-hmm. Sometimes writing down their words, sometimes taking a photo, and just that again, finding pace in that everyday life with the child that allows you to not only listen in multiple ways, but that hear all those voices, mm-hmm. all those expressions, all those 100 languages of children, right? Mm-hmm. It's not going to be what they say. It's going to be the things that they return to every day. It just brings such a, I don't know, a respect to the work, mm-hmm. from my opinion, that there's no how-to, there's no mm-hmm. formula.
Right.
So many multiple ways to be in tune with the child, in touch with the child, and at the child's pace, and to be a documenter. It's not always about taking 100 pictures and writing down their words, right?
Yes. Yeah.
You're just telling a story to a parent when they pick their kid up. I mean, that's documentation, right?
Right.
I can't believe what she said when she was playing in the water today. You know, it's, it can be so casual.
Right. And it can be advocacy. It can benefit the adults to do that kind of storytelling. But that is should be sort of the side effect or the extra kind of ripple in the ripple effect, not our whole purpose for paying attention to children is how I can use this information for the grownups in the program.
Yeah. Yeah. Their day's for them. The child's day is for them. And I mean,
I love that.
As an adult, we would hate it if the sum of our day was written up with a cute picture of us and then,
you know, yeah, like my dean walks around and takes pictures of me through the day and then sends them to Steve trying to interpret what she thinks I'm doing.
I mean, you might like that, but.
Well, it would be fun. It'd be funny. Not fun. Yeah. It'd be funny.
Yeah.
To read the interpretations, but you know, it's another example though of, if it was adults and adults living together, we would think that was a silly thing to do. But for some reason, we think it makes sense when it's adults and children together.
Yeah.
There's that hierarchy that gets in the way.
Yeah. And there's that. It is their day. I love that.
Yeah, me too. I know.
It's their day. It's the child's day.
Mm-hmm.
And how does what we document or say or report or pay attention to reflect their interests, what they care about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a good way to think about how to prioritize. It also makes me think about, I was talking to Heather a little bit about this idea of normalizing childhood, which I was reading from, you know, one of the Loris Malaguzzi stuff, that not to swing to this romantic notion, like,
right.
Oh my God, every moment is precious. Look at, he's holding a book. He's learning about shapes. And, you know, every moment is, you know, a miracle. And you're so patient and wonderful because you work with children. It's right. Romantic and it's sentimental.
So it, but it's that, like, that both romanticizes and criticizes the child.
Yes. Right. It's like when people say that, it's like, why are you making me out to be a saint for spending, you think it's
right.
Horrible to spend time with children. It's actually like, it's kind of like what I want to do.
Right. It's my choice. You just said the quiet part out loud.
About I'm getting a really lot from this. It's like the normalization, again, the mundane, the normalization, mm-hmm. the living life together. Right.
Yeah.
It's not like, and sometimes I say that to parents when I'm trying to talk about care, like, you know, you have dinner together every night, or you have a bath together every night. You know, those are the things that build the relationship. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that it's always lovely. I mean, sometimes you want to pull your hair out, but you do it over and over and over again. And that's mm-hmm. the quality, mm-hmm. you know, the quantity and quality of time. It's not so much richer than, you know, signing up for ballet or whatever.
Right, right.
Oh, the pressure to do things, that the mundane is the life,
it's just more authentic.
Yeah,
you know, it's, we don't have to make things up either to just keep the child busy. The assumption there is that if we don't keep them busy, they'll be terrible, right? Or they'll be in a perpetual state of deficit if they're not busy. And we just, we make it harder for everybody with that feeling that we always have to be doing. It always has to be special. It always has to be lovely. It will be those things sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, like you can see the lovely things in the rough moments too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
My son's two.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's lovely,
and a lot of our days aren't lovely right now. We probably he's a super easygoing kid, and this has probably been like the hardest week of his life. And it's just like, I don't know if you guys noticed when we got on the computer, he just had tears streaming down his cheeks, and he was saying, oh, what does he say? He says mama body, dad body. When he wants to be held. So he's standing over there and I'm getting stuff set up. And he was knocking all my buttons and I was like, and so he goes in with my husband and he's been, learning how to escalate his own emotions so they're really big, which has been interesting. And so he's just crying and he's like, mama body, mama body. And I'm like, well, come here, you know, like we can have this beautiful moment, even though it was not a beautiful lead up to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds like he needs some time at Aunt Heather's house.
He does.
That's what really it sounds like to me.
Yeah.
Body. I love that.
I do too. Well, I wish my kids had said that.
I know. When he says dad body, it sounds like dead body. And so that's kind of creepy to hear, like on the baby monitor, at bedtime. But
oh my gosh. Okay.
I do. There was another quote from one of the teachers when they were talking about the moments, and Carrie Carlson, she says, to be aware of the moments, we are given moments for common interest and learning, to learn to be slow with the environment and to be aware of the moments you are given as a teacher. And that, like, I don't know, that just really got, I have little hearts all around. Because, you know, if we're in the, you know, consumption of time, you know, we need to get through all of these things mindset, that we're missing like the little moments of
being
everything, just being.
yeah
And I think sometimes people get like they think that it's almost like they think we're reducing early childhood to like a welfare kind of model, like, oh, you just care for kids, you just have the moments, you have the day to day, you have the mundane. It's kind of the opposite. It's and that's why I do like how she talks about the little stories she tells in part two about the children returning to the dead tree, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
These repeated experiences, the depth of, you know, something that wasn't planned, this dead tree that you can rip apart, that you can play with the mulch, that you can find animals living in, that you can see through the seasons. You know, it is the everyday, but you know, the things children do with the stories, the way that they tell their own stories, the way that the stories become a part of the, she talks about valuing the individual and the community, like, you know, the stories become a part of that group, right? That everyone kind of knows everyone's story. So it's the opposite of sort of this welfare minimum child care model. It's just because of the respect for children as humans and going at their pace, the depth is so rich, offers so many possibilities.
Yeah. So I was thinking about, okay, so then what's the teacher role in this? Because I think one of the things that makes it difficult for adults to make a shift like this is they think, well, then why do I need to be there? What's special about me? How am I a professional? I need to be able to prove that I'm a professional. And you just touched on it there. You still have to have some deep knowledge and a little bit of expertise and an understanding of how children develop and grow to be able to keep learning about this dead tree that you didn't plan. Like you didn't get that off Pinterest or Teachers Pay Teachers. That was in the space and the children kind of guide their teacher to that. And you return and you notice the changes and you see how it's interesting and valuable. That's professionalism in my mind more than, you know, lesson plans and curriculum and using school words to describe ourselves.
And if you have that true passion with the children, you're probably doing a lot more thinking than
it becomes automatic and you don't realize it's happening. Plan,
like, okay, here's the things we're gonna learn about trees this week. But when the kids are asking questions and you're like, wow, what are we gonna do tomorrow when we encounter the dead tree? You know, do I need some little hammers or picks or, you know, what is my knowledge about this tree and how am I going to respond to the things that the direction children are taking it? And maybe they're not even interested in the dread tree. Maybe they pull apart all this mulch and make a little nest and they're, you know, they're doing something else, pretend with it, but why have the intellectual curiosity to make those moment by moment decisions that takes it to this deep place.
Yeah, that's such a, I think, an important phrase to talk about and think about, intellectual curiosity, because a lot of current standards and outcomes we're expected to be hitting are not necessarily allowing for that kind of intellectual curiosity. In fact, a lot of times the message is, we don't trust you to be intellectual enough to do this work on your own. So we're going to give you the weekly curriculum that you follow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or and go ahead.
You go.
Well, yeah, I was just thinking the, when you have it handed to you, that is forcing you to ignore these moments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's saying, don't, it's like the attention span with children. Like, you're saying, nope, we don't want you to notice what they're doing and notice what their interests are. Their interest this week is going to be trains.
Right.
Like, we're all going to be excited about it and then make a big train out of chairs in the parking lot together as a school. Like, that's what we're interested in.
Yeah. This is what 2-year-olds across the country will be interested in next week. It will be trains.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, it goes that way for children too, that when the teacher is the one saying, okay, we're doing trains this week, we're telling them again, well, I know what's interesting for you,
mm-hmm.
and you're wrong about your own thoughts.
Right.
Like,
yes.
I mean,
yeah. Yeah. I was just talking about this with someone. I can't remember who, maybe it was when I recorded with Mike the other day. Talking about like Erickson's stages, and one of them is initiative versus, you know, shame and doubt. And for me, what that means is, like, you know, you want to do trains, the child's showing they want to do something else. And then we get annoyed at that child. What we're teaching them is, your ideas are bad.
Mm-hmm.
And that works against that initiative that they're sort of working towards at that age.
I also think this is really hard. I mean, this is not like, you know, I've been practicing listening to children for a long time and learning when to pause and learning when to repeat what they said, or did you hear what Heather said, you know, to the rest of the group, or learning to like come back to it the next day. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, and learning and thinking something that I thought was really exciting, I come back to the next day and it's not going anywhere with them, but
mm-hmm.
Like trying to find that vein of enlivened energy in the room that you can build that community around isn't easy. Mm-mm. So it keeps you on your toes, and it's exciting to teach that way.
Yeah. And so to think, oh, I listened to this podcast yesterday where they talked about slow knowledge, so I'm changing everything. Starting tomorrow, we're slow all day, all the time. That's going to be overwhelming. But if it's something you feel like you're not really doing and you want to do more of, you can just start with little pieces of your day, or a specific kind of question you're going to look for clues about. You can practice in little bits of time, and build it. It's a skill, right? Like everything.
And a material. Time is a material.
And a material. Mm-hmm.
So especially as we're starting up a new year, some people have a little bit of time off in August and, you know, mm-hmm. getting things reopened. And we have, like you said,
on the red chair, I moved it out of the way.
To-do list, right?
Yep. You just unmuted yourself instead of muting Bethany.
So sorry.
Okay. It's on the red chair.
It's on the red chair. That's okay. It's not like you gave us all your passwords or something. Unless it's on the red chair as a password.
That was. What was I thinking?
I don't know. That's okay. I'm flipping through some pages if anyone has something else to say here.
I did have something to say,
uh-huh.
but then I got distracted by locating my purse. Okay, go ahead.
No, you go. You just remembered.
Oh. Well, did I? Nope.
Okay. Go ahead. All right. I left my well, mind as I told you both before we recorded, I haven't really read as much of the second half of the book as I thought I had. But when I was flipping through this afternoon, I did find a couple of things. And so one is on page 121. And again, it's someone that she's working with as part of her research. Who is this? Somebody Cross, but I can't find the first name. Beth Cross. She says, do we allow ourselves to be in the moment?
Yeah,
parentheses, human being. Mm-hmm. Do we share a sense of what we have yet to learn or become? Parentheses, becoming human or human becoming. How do we convey prior experience or balance that will that with the present? And then it's parentheses, human having been. So I think that's just, you know, a wordier way of saying we have to figure out our own being in time and relationship with time as part of this process.
Yeah.
And slowing down and having that mindfulness about our, you know, ourselves, our daily life and our work life.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the only way that you can come to being slow with children.
Right.
Because, you know, you have to have that self-awareness.
Yeah. Did you just say mindfulness at the beginning of that? Or did I
did.
Okay, I good. I was like, wait, did I just imagine that? Because, I mean, this is something that I was talking to Mike about when we recorded, the idea that we all kind of think mindfulness needs to be this separating ourselves from everything and meditating and being calm. When really it's just that awareness that you're describing it, practicing, thinking about in the moment, how am I experiencing this? What am I feeling? What do I need? What do I want to do? You know, once we allow ourselves, it's kind of like play, right? We don't want to let children play because we don't remember playing and we don't play anymore as adults.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of living in the moment is so foreign to us once we grow up.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, there's such an interesting like juxtaposition when you think about children, like you're Bethany's a mom right now. So it's like, you know, days can seem so long when you have a 2-year-old, right? And everyone's telling you like, oh, it's going to go so fast.
Also
you
know? A 30-year-old living in your house.
You better enjoy it. And it's like all those, like those contrasts between time where it's like, oh my gosh, is this moment ever going to end?
Yeah.
And like, whoa, you look back 5 years later and, right. and try to remember what it felt like to hold your baby. And that childhood is so quickly fleeting, that the brain is developing so quickly, the body, the language, the vocabulary, everything is just, I mean, it's zooming, the development. And yet the child's sense of time and our ability to be with them and say, we value you now, right, in this moment, in this relationship, as you are, that in this mundane moment of living together, there's, you know, not to swing to the dull or to the sensational, but there's just so much brilliance. And that mindfulness is having to kind of adjust our own thinking about the value of the moment, right? The value. Yeah. Day and our value of ourselves.
Yeah.
How do we value the time that we're spending with children? How do we value those children?
Mm-hmm. And the children probably aren't thinking, oh, this is a different way of thinking about time than we used to do. Right. But we're modeling something, you know, different. And it's almost a respect and an acceptance of them.
That presence, right?
Yeah.
You know when someone's present with you and when they're not.
Yeah.
You know, my kids would give me that, you know, they'd be talking to me and they'd know I was on my computer or something like, yeah, mom, we know you're not really with us.
Yeah.
You know? But they know when you're with them, right? Mm-hmm. When you're listening,
yeah.
when you're there.
Yeah.
And then we have so many things to do when we take care of kids, right?
Right. That's true too. We feel like we need to constantly keep ourselves busy too. Yeah.
So yeah, it's just that juxtaposition of how quickly time is fleeting and how the child's pace is different than ours, and the things they notice is different, and that's their gift, that they live in the here and now. That's what they give us, the here and now.
Yeah,
we're always trying to take
them out. Bethany wants to talk about spontaneity.
Well, yeah, I mean it.
if the chat box is any indication.
I know, because I kept forgetting the word, so I had to write it down. Mm-hmm. But you know, if it's when we slow down, she talks about several times when we slow down, it gives us the opportunity to be spontaneous. And then towards the end, she talks about how it. How slowing down lets us see what's urgent.
Yeah.
And so I think that's kind of like the, I can't think of the word. I'm sorry. But the like trade-off, and mm-hmm. that's not the word I want, but mm-hmm. to slowing down is that our lives can also fill up and be more vibrant and
uh-huh. yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. It's like it's the contrast, it's the juxtaposition. We slow down to realize what's important, realize what's urgent, so that putting those words slow and urgent together is powerful,
right? And doesn't seem like they should fit together.
Yeah.
And the urgency of sort of defending childhood, right?
Mm-hmm.
That the slow has such a role to play in not accelerating the pace and the and mm-hmm. the and skipping, bypassing phase of life.
Yeah. The whole earlier is better, you know, part of our culture comes from this idea of needing to be fast and not slow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was looking, I thought I had seen this, so I just found it, but it's on page 50, they list, it's actually David Orr, who has these, he's outlined and like fast knowledge versus slow knowledge with more of a direct sort of, well, it's just a comparison that I think is useful. And I think it fits what you both were just talking about. But he says fast knowledge deals with discrete things. Slow knowledge deals with context and patterns and connections. Mm. So it's so much more abstract that it takes a little bit of real concentration to be able to make that shift. Fast knowledge is mostly linear, and that's what we try to do in early childhood. Slow knowledge is complex and ecological. So it's a lot more about the whole system and not just that one child or that one teacher.
Yeah.
Fast knowledge is characterized by power and instability. Slow knowledge is known by its elegance, complexity, and resilience.
Love that.
I know. I was like, elegance. I would not have used that word to describe really anything with young children, but there it is. And I agree with him. Let's see. Oh, fast knowledge is often abstract and theoretical, engaging only a portion of the mind. So those things that we think are really proving intelligence or proving skill might actually be showing us only a portion or engaging only a portion. But slow knowledge engages all of the senses and the full range of our mental power.
Yes. It reminds me of it. It's like the Michael Graham. How do you say his grammar?
Grambling. Yeah.
Grambling. He talks about that, like that phase in where they had the word study and they thought, kids in poverty are like so many hundreds of thousands.
The word gap. Yeah.
The word gap. And how, so they started teaching kids words in isolation. Uh-huh. Like time is going to be, we're going to learn this vocabulary. And it was the exact opposite of the way children learn words is through slow. Uh-huh. It's through conversation. It's through dialogue. It's through the reciprocal exchange of stories. And so they took these discrete words
mm-hmm.
and said, we're going to teach vocabulary.
Right.
And it actually didn't help. And the word gap thing is kind of a myth. I guess it's all being questioned right now.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was interesting that like you said, people misapply concepts. So let's teach vocabulary. But the way we teach vocabulary is having conversations, and that requires us to be slow.
Yeah.
That requires us not to know what the child's going to say and not to know how we're going to mm-hmm. respond and to be in the moment and to meander and to wander and to be in this unknown territory and to have that's when children remember words and concepts.
Mm-hmm.
It's meaningful. So it's the converse. It's like, right. It's about what you said.
Especially if it's within a relationship, within kind of a trusting, attuned relationship. Or even just, you know, that's one thing I remember about that section of Graham Lean's book, The Great Disconnect, is that he talked about it being more valuable for the children to hear the conversations between the adults around them which is just what you were saying, but it was just such a shift, you know, because I, as a director, used to get so annoyed if, and you know, still you don't want to have so many conversations with adults that you're ignoring the children, but anytime that I saw them like just chit-chatting, I would get really annoyed by that, or with, especially in the infant room, like they were both sitting up in their rocking chairs while the babies were on the floor. Babies were fine on the floor, but I was annoyed because they were talking to each other and not to the baby. The babies were still getting that language input.
That's interesting. I found myself relaxing when we had that year. We were super, super COVID year where we were outside and we had no time for planning or prep. And then we'd sit at the picnic table while the kids were playing on the playground and have our teacher meetings when we could. And I thought, you know, this works. This is fine.
Yeah.
We're not engaging the children. They're playing and we're sitting over here having an adult conversation.
Yeah.
And the children are coming over. What are you doing? Oh, we're writing down some notes. We're doing some teacher meetings. I thought, well, this is kind of like living together.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You know, I softened up about adult conversations.
Which is, you know, it was a weird sort of switch to be flipped for me. I thought, you know, I had such good reasons for the things that I was annoyed about. And then I had to change my mind.
And then sometimes you think about that little baby laying there looking at the light coming through the window. Maybe they're thinking like, would you stop talking to me, lady?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. We say engaging, but what we're doing is interrupting so often.
Yeah.
I'm trying to focus here. Excuse me. Allergies are bad at Heather's house this week.
Oh, no.
What else? We've kind of...
Yeah, I think it's just...
We've hit a lot.
It's all
for someone who hadn't read the half of the book we were going to discuss. I feel like I had a lot to say.
Well. You did well. I think it's just like... What is the word? I wrote down the word timescape. Like I'm trying to think of that word when I enter, you know, the vacuum cleaners and the floor polishing and everything's happening right now. We're closed for a week. So we got that energy right now. And I'm thinking like, what is the timescape of our school and how do we?
So how does using that specific word help you think about this? I just love the way that, you know, sometimes you just change the word you use for something and it helps your brain shift in a different direction.
I guess I'm thinking like there's the environment that you see, like we're setting things up on the shelf, you know, we're trying to make the classroom inviting, physically inviting. Kids will own the room and learn that it's theirs. And then there's the like soundscape, right? Mm-hmm. Our voices and our songs and sort of how we move through the day. And then there's the timescape, like, how do we treat time?
Yeah, I like that.
And how can we...
I approve of your word, Carol.
How can we be more deliberate with the timescape right now? That's what I'm thinking about. I don't have an answer, but I'm just thinking it's kind of exciting to consider a material.
Yeah.
It's easy to hurt.
Bethany?
I agree.
You agree too? Yeah. Okay. All right. That's a good place for us to wrap up then. We all agree with Carol.
It's as usual.
Right. For a change, we all agree with what Carol said. We love you, Carol.
I love you too.
All right. Well, so again, I guess the book is Slow Knowledge and the Unhurried Child by Allison Clark. Maybe we talked about this in the first one, but I think it's funny that at least Bethany and I have both said this. We were annoyed at how long it was taking us to read the book about slow knowledge.
For such a short book, it took me.
I was like, I'm going to whip right through this, but nope, there's too much to think about. It's taken me too long.
No, I had a funny story. I said I put on the YouTube last night with Peter Moss and Allison Clark, and so I I had it on my phone and I plugged it into my car this morning on the way. And so I was finishing that up. And then I was like, I'm going to go the slow way to work because there's a really nice country road I can take that takes like 10 minutes longer because I really want to listen to all this. And then as I'm listening to them and I'm taking this country road, there's this big construction situation where they're taking down a tree and there's three men standing on the side of the road and they're all holding a sign that says slow. I was like, oh my God, the universe has conspired.
Good old to make universe.
These go down. I was like, I wanted to stop and say, can I take a picture of you guys holding those signs?
But nothing weird.
Right. Picture. Just going to put it on the board in my office. That's it.
I loved it. I was like, slow. I saw three men holding slow signs this morning.
Yeah. Oh gosh. That's so funny. Did it freak you out a little bit though? I would have been freaked out.
Yeah, it was
at the coming together of all those things. All right. Well, this has been great. It's always fun to talk to you two. And I'm glad I woke up from my nap so we could talk.
It's so good to see you. Thank you. Thank you, Allison Clark.
Yes, thank you for the book. Maybe we'll try and get her on next. I'm on an unbelievable author saying yes run right now. So
you
we'll see what happens.
You're doing it.
All right. Thank you all. And thanks everybody for listening to another episode of That Early Childhood Nerd.
And that's the show. Now go get your nerd on.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.